we face as we work to create a healthier future for our community and the planet. Hear from regional and national guests, find out about upcoming events, and learn how to keep yourself and your family well. Tune in each week from 6 to 7 on Monday evenings or listen anytime at kkfi.org/podcasts.
Hey, Maynard, how many of those extra cars or boats do you really need laying around? Your yard is starting to look like a junkyard. Did you know KKFI would take one or all of those vehicles, running or not? You could get rid of them, providing you have a title, and KKFI would receive the funds, which would be a tax deduction for you. Call KKFI at 816-931-3122.
The views and opinions of this program are those of its host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project, or its staff and volunteers.
Welcome to Jaws of Justice Radio on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. It's Monday morning. My name is Terry. Jaws of Justice Radio strives to investigate how to achieve justice in America, and this includes issues of achieving justice from a system of laws deeply rooted in economic, social, and political inequality. We want to dispel misconceptions created by the news and entertainment industry, politicians, and our educational system. We hope you will listen. We will begin our hour and hear from host Latara Smith and her guest, Cliff Middleton. Cliff's father was convicted by jury of murdering his wife 20 years ago and has been in prison all this time. Asking for a retrial, he has always maintained his innocence. There were no witnesses to this event. Ken Middleton has always clearly denied that he had anything to do with her shooting. Cliff is going to share with us the good news that finally Ken Middleton will have another trial. Finally, we will find if the evidence supports a guilty verdict. After the calendar, Macy Jones and I will speak with Lori Curry, executive director and founder of Missouri Prison Reform, and Aaron Brown, a nurse who was formerly employed by the Department of Corrections. They will speak on the topic of health care for incarcerated people. Missouri Prison Reform is a 501c3 nonprofit organization that advocates for Missouri's incarcerated and their families by elevating their voices, advocating for their needs, and exposing harmful policies that undermine our overall goal of harm reduction, healing, and rehabilitation. It was founded in 2019 by Lori Curry after she began to learn about prison conditions in Missouri. Lori wanted to amplify the voices of those impacted by Missouri's carceral system and advocate for better prison conditions. Missouri Prison Reform has been contacted by more and more people living inside prisons, as well as their families, and even prison staff who wanted to tell their story or seek help. Aaron Brown spent 8 years in correctional nursing, and she has seen the ins and outs of what works and what doesn't. On Jaws of Justice, we examine how to find justice in our society. Justice will not be served until those who are unaffected are as outraged as those who are. Now, our show. Good morning, Latara. So I have you on Zoom. I don't see Cliff yet. Have you heard from him?
And where he was at, but I am most definitely prepared to move forward, and prayerfully he will join us here shortly.
I know he will. He's so very reliable. And you have a couple of other guests I wanted to shout out to. Keith Carnes will be on, and exoneree Anthony Williams will be on. Can everybody?
Yes.
Can everybody say good morning?
Good morning, hey, everyone. Good morning. Thank you guys for tuning in. We also have another special lady sitting in with us. So just to let you know that Ms. Sanders is here with us as well. But we want to Most definitely. Thank you guys for giving us the opportunity to come on here this morning. Like I said, I don't know where Cliff is. You know, we were really anticipating on him being on here, but I think we can most definitely kind of get going with the show and inform our listeners of what's going on with Mr. Middleton's case. Before we go into the specifics here, I want to say this here. Keith Carnes, you served time in Crossroads Correctional Facility with Mr. Middleton, correct?
Yes, I did.
So he's been fighting for this for quite some time.
Over 30 years. Yes, and the prosecutor, has the power, Senate bill, to release him after all this time. And she needs to use that.
Well, I think, too, what's going on here. So let's just go ahead and inform the listeners. Mr. Middleton has been incarcerated for over 30-some-odd years. He's an elderly gentleman, I believe, in his mid-70s. And originally, when he was charged with this murder of murdering his wife, Mr. Middleton was sentenced to life in prison with no parole. He has always maintained his innocence from day one. I want to make sure that the listeners do understand that. And at one point, the judge in his case, which was Judge Edith Messina, and I'm going to make you guys aware of who Edith Messina is and the part that she currently plays in our Jackson County, Missouri prosecutor's office. But Edith Messina was Ken Middleton's judge back then. And she actually, if I'm not mistaken, had, you know, over, you know, basically found some things in the case where, you know, basically the case could have been overturned. And I know at that point in time, they offered Mr. Middleton an Alford plea, which he refused to accept because he said, I just can't accept that. I can't say that because I did not murder my wife. Now, he's been in prison this entire time. You know, even after being given the Alford plea, he's been in prison this entire time, maintaining his innocence. So, Anthony, let me ask you something, because you're very well versed in law, okay, being a paralegal. An Alford plea, let's just talk about the fact that Mr. Middleton did not accept that Alford plea. He turned it down. Would you agree that any inmate would accept an Alford plea to get on down the road and get rid of this conviction? Would you agree with that?
Yeah, if they weren't innocent, I'm sure they would take it and try to get out. Everybody's first choice is to save themselves, but sometimes when guys are innocent, they won't take an after plea. They won't admit to doing something that they didn't do. And if it means staying in jail longer, sometimes guys will elect to make that choice. And I was a person that made their choices with.
Right. Would you agree with exoneree Anthony, exoneree Keith? Carnes, would you agree with that? What he's saying in reference to that?
Okay. Me and Anthony, both being exonerees and being in the same predicament that Mr. Middleton is in right now. I remember over the years being asked questions like if they were to say this and just to plead guilty. It's kind of like an offer plea. Just plead guilty and they let you go. Would you do it? And I always just say no. And it's like, man, for real? For something I didn't do? No, I'm not going to take no a plea, an offer plea or whatever you might want to label it as. But you have some people might like, you can fight your freedom while you're out for your freedom then and get exonerated. So some people, you've been gone so long. Mm-hmm. So some people might look at it differently and say, get on out there, your mama old, get on out and fight for your freedom from there.
Well, let me ask you this, because you said something that many people won't say, and I've even referred to like exoneree Anthony Williams or exoneree Keith Carnes. Keith, can you explain to our listeners real quick what an exoneree is? Because many people may not know.
Exoneree is someone that was wrongfully convicted of a crime. And through the grace of God and him using earthen vessels and by you putting in your own work prayerfully, you can get exonerated. That's from that crime that you did not do. So an exoneree is someone that has been exonerated from a crime that they did not do.
meaning exonerator. An exoneree is an individual who was innocent, wrongly convicted, and there had to be some type of newly discovered evidence or something as such which resulted in that individual's case being overturned and that individual being set free. Now, we were just at an innocence conference, and prayerfully next year, amen, we will be able to add Mr. Middleton to that list of 6,653 exonerees, according to the stats that were at the Innocence Conference. Prayerfully, we will be able to add Mr. Middleton's name next year to that, as well as many more.
Can I add to that?
Sure, go ahead.
That was an extra 1,000 from the year before.
Yes, you are correct.
Released.
Released.
Walking across the stage 1,000 years, extra 1,000 years. A year later.
Right.
Innocent people walking across the stage. 1,000 years worth of wrongful conviction.
Well, now that we've touched base and explained to our listeners exactly what an exoneree is, I want to now turn back, and hopefully, like I said, Mr. Middleton is soon going to be an exoneree. That's what we're all believing for Mr. Middleton. But I want to now kind of get into the specifics of his case, okay? Now, in Jackson County, Missouri, we have what's called a conviction integrity unit. The conviction integrity unit is just what it says. It is to look at the integrity of that particular conviction. Now, that particular program or unit is ran by our current Jackson County, Missouri prosecutor, Gene Peters Baker. And if I'm not mistaken, it is overseen by, Dion Sanker, if I'm not mistaken, is the assistant right underneath Gene, or the chief assistant, whatever that is, over the CIU. Now, that particular unit is to look at cases and say, hey, what evidence exists that we can bring this case back in, look at it, and possibly overturn it from the standpoint of the local prosecutor doing that. Well, Mr. Middleton's case was submitted to the Conviction Integrity Unit by Kent Gibson, which Keith Carnes, Kent, he was always also your attorney, correct?
Yes.
Great.
They got me out.
They got you out, exactly. Him and Taylor. We got to give Taylor credit as well. Yay, Taylor. But his case was turned down by the Conviction Integrity Unit. And, you know, that was always a question when it came to Mr. Middleton's case. Why is Jean Peters Baker, why did she hide behind a jurisdictional defect, refusing to correct Ken Middleton's wrongful conviction by not using her newfound jurisdiction under Senate Bill 53? Now, this is the catch 22. You heard me say Edith Messina was Ken Middleton's judge at the time of this original trial. Well, Edith Messina now serves in the position of being the advisor to Jean Peters Baker, who is the current top prosecutor in Jackson County, Missouri. So the question was, why, if Jean Peters Baker's own advisor agreed that Ken Middleton was wrongly convicted 16 years ago, isn't that information of an erroneous conviction? So why did Jean Peters Baker not address that under Senate Bill 53? I mean, so, you know, Senate Bill 53, the motion to vacate or set aside the verdict, section 547.031. So I'm just going to explain to the listeners. Keith, do you think you can take over and do that for me? Or Anthony, you want, which one of you guys want to take this part over here?
It says that this act provides that a prosecuting or circuit attorney may file a motion to vacate or set aside the judgment at any time if he or she has information that the convicted person may be innocent or may have an erroneously convicted. Yes. The circuit court in which the person was convicted shall have jurisdiction and authority to consider, hear, and decide the motion. Upon the filing of such a motion, the court shall order a hearing and issue findings of fact and conclusions of law on all issues presented.
Now, Anthony, let me take you back to something, because you are actually one of the exonerees, which are very few. And I want to commend you here, because now, Keith, we know you worked on your case as well. So you and the law library doing your thing, too. But Anthony, you actually drafted your own paperwork that resulted in your release. Am I correct?
Yes, ma'am.
OK, so what do you think about this? That, you know, right here, you know, this act provides that a prosecuting circuit attorney may file a motion to vacate or set aside the judgment at any time if he or she has information that the convicted person may be innocent or may have been erroneously convicted. The circuit court, meaning the local prosecutor, okay, in which the person was convicted shall have jurisdiction. That's the point I wanted to make. The prosecutor had, what does it say, shall have jurisdiction to address this situation and overturn it. What do you think about that? What do you think about our local prosecutor who has refused to address this under the law, has refused to address this and not move in Mr. Middleton's case?
Right. Well, I actually think the Conviction Integrity Union is a very helpful tool for guys that's incarcerated claiming innocence. And I think that the only way that it will really work as it's designed to work is that these prosecutors that's charged with controlling the conviction integrity units really really thoroughly review these cases that's coming before them that are questionable. Too often we see guys like myself, guys like Keith, guys like Lamar Johnson and Kevin Strickland and Ricky Kidd, et cetera, making the same claims of innocence for years after years after years, and the courts denying them. And I believe that was the reason for the Conviction Integrity Unit. When they see that the courts are not doing their jobs, when they see that there is evidence that could lead to a person's innocence, the integrity unit should at least review the case and give a person a chance to see if that person is innocent or not. Right. If we wake up a year from now and some court or somebody else say that Ken Middleton is innocent, how does that make the prosecutor look and the conviction integrity unit? It doesn't make them look good at all.
Right. So Keith, let me ask you, do you know if any person has been released in Missouri under this Senate Bill 53? Do you know of anyone that is actually that the prosecutor has utilized this bill to set someone free?
Yeah, I believe Kevin Strickland is the only one.
Wow.
And the so-called conviction integrity unit has been in effect since 2014?
But it became into effect like 2017 or 18, yeah, something like that. 18. Yeah.
And this is only one person, but in that time period, it through people having to litigate for years, they've let people out, you know, in Missouri.
Right.
So, like you were saying, it makes them look bad.
Well, that's another problem I feel we have with our law. In the United States as a whole, is that we have a lot of good laws. It's just to protect people's rights, et cetera. But are we actually utilizing the laws and utilizing the systems in the way that they're supposed to be utilized to help people?
Yes, sir.
And that's the problem. It's not, okay, the Conviction Integrity Unit, yes, that's something we needed. But now, are we going to utilize the Conviction Integrity Unit to do the task that it was set out to do? And obviously, at this point, it hasn't been used as it was designed to be utilized.
Right. Right. And,
when I was fighting, I studied Conviction Integrity Units. We pushed in Missouri on the beginning of my fight to get it passed. We fought for years to try to implement it. And it finally got passed, you know, but during my studies of real conviction integrity units, it's like in those offices, it's like two separate entities of prosecutors. So it's not the same one running the show.
Right.
You know, So if you got the same people calling themselves Conviction Integrity Unit, but you the same people that's been denying people for years. It's not
right. That's the point.
It's supposed to be two separate entities.
No,
you know what I'm saying?
No accountability.
Yeah, it's supposed to be two separate
And then I believe, too, that would be a lack of transparency and then as well as accountability. So that's a good point, Keith, because, you know, the way Conviction Integrity Unit should be formed, they have their own division. They have their own investigators, their own prosecutors. They have their own staff, their own secretaries, everything. It's not the same people who prosecuted the case previously looking over the
crew. Cronies.
Right.
It's a whole different entity.
Well, you know what, moving forward, I want to say this, because what we want to bring awareness to now is we've kind of touched base on the basic things that have happened in Mr. Middleton's case, how our prosecutor in Jackson County, Missouri has just absolutely not done anything in reference to this case. But now, by the grace of God, Mr. Middleton is now back in court with an upcoming court date. You know, his attorney, like I stated, is Kent Gibson. He filed a motion. And that motion was granted. So he has an upcoming court date. I was hoping that Cliff would be on here so that he could give us the specifics, but I'm looking up that court date right now. But that court date is actually a blessing. And it has been a long time coming for Mr. Middleton. And like I said, I'm trying to find it right now. Maybe our radio producer can maybe has that information. They can find it a little bit quicker than I can. But he has an upcoming court date. So he has been able to get back into court. And I think that's a wonderful thing that Mr. Middleton very well now will have his day in court.
It's been a long time.
Because he's been turned down so many times. He's been turned down. And now we have the, you know, the opportunity for him to go to court. So, you know, I know his family and his supporters, his advocates are all just ecstatic about this, that now he's going to be back in court. And we're believing, you know, for good things. We're believing that this case is going to be overturned like yours, Keith, and like yours, Anthony, you know?
Yes.
What do you guys think he's feeling right now, just knowing that he has an upcoming court date? What is he feeling, Anthony? What is he feeling? I'm going to bring that question back to you, Keith.
Overwhelmed.
Yeah.
That's a crazy feeling. I mean, anxiety, nervousness. I mean, like one of the interesting things about guys that served a lot of time, wrongly convicted, is that, for as many people you've seen actually be released and exonerated after wrongful conviction, you've seen thousands of cases denied, thousands of guys who were granted hearings. It looked like everything was lined up right, and all the evidence and everything that was needed was there, and then still get denied. And so, and it happened to me on numerous occasions. And so, you know, you always have that in the back of your mind. I don't care how close you are to actually proving your innocence until the judge or whoever the say so is says that you can go home now. You know, you're on the edge of your seat all the way to the end.
So what are you saying? He's on the edge of his seat. And you know what? Mr. Middleton can hear us. So Mr. Middleton, I won't, because the guys in Crossroads, they can hear these shows. So Mr. Middleton, if you can hear us, I want you to know we are excited for you. We are cheering you on.
Brothers from another mother for life, man.
Yeah, they said you are brothers. Yeah, you guys are brothers from another mother. And I want you to know that we are so happy for you. We are praying for you. We're going to be there in support of you. I'm asking, you know, people to come out and please support Mr. Middleton. We will have some exoneree brothers that are coming in from out of state and from other areas to come in and be present. So I'm just ecstatic. You know, as an investigator, I know what it takes to get a case to this point. And it's not easy. And I also know what it's like. And you guys know, too, when you file motions, and motions were filed on y'all's behalf and they were turned down, they were denied. I know the feeling that Mr. Middleton has had, you know, every time a motion was turned down. And now Mr. Middleton is in court. So we're just so happy. So, you know, we're getting down to the last of our minutes. Anthony, I'm going to give you a quick minute. Is there anything you want to say in closing in reference to how the justice system handled these cases? We got about a quick minute.
Well, I just like to say that I just would hope that in a case like Mr. Middleton's, where it's a possibility that a guy is in, that is innocent, this guy's been in there over 30 years, he's an elderly person, and I would just hate, I would hate to see this this man lose his life actually in prison for something that he didn't do. And if any human being that has the power to save a life, should.
Okay. So just really quick, we got about 30 seconds, Keith. You wanted to say something in closing really quick, and then I'm going to shut us out.
No, just stay strong, brother. Yeah. All you other brothers stay strong for the convicted. Just keep the fight going, man. Don't give up.
Right. And then you said you wanted to mention Christopher Dunn. Christopher Dunn is also in a hearing in St. Louis. So we're same thing. We're going to be praying for him. We're happy that Chris now is back in court as well. Mm-hmm. And we believe that they will both be at the Exoneree National Conference next year.
Yes.
So in closing, I want to thank the listeners for tuning in with us today. Once again, this is LaTara Smith Carnes of the Casey Freedom Project. I had my wonderful Exoneree brother, Anthony Williams, here with me. And I have a Miss Sanders sitting in with me. We thank you as well. And Keith, my wonderful Exoneree brother, I appreciate you being here, sitting in with this interview with me. And once again, everyone, please come out, support Mr. Middleton. Cliff, I hope we did a good job for your dad. And everyone, have a blessed day. Thank you for tuning in.
Support for KKFI comes from the Climate Council. Presenting Kansas City's 2024 Earth Festival, April 19th through the 22nd, this year's festival is keynoted by Brigadier General Wendell Chris King. The festival also includes climate fairs, workshops, webinars, and open houses. Learn more about the 2024 Earth Festival, April 19th through the 22nd at climategkc.org.
Voices of Kansas City is a community conversation produced by the Kansas City Star. This season, Star reporters will interview Black grassroots activists, from a 17-year-old youth ambassador who for the last 5 years has been pushing for the empowerment of young people in Kansas City and their right to vote in municipal elections, to a transgender woman of color who is standing up for the rights and safety of people in the area's trans community. Tune into 90.1 FM to hear Kansas City's community activists share their stories of struggle, commitment, success, and joy. Join us at 6 p.m. on Wednesdays this spring for Voices of Kansas City. Our hope is that you'll be inspired by these stories and help to further unify the city.
Voices of Kansas City, Season 2, beginning Wednesday, April 17th at 6 p.m. right here on KKFI. Money.
Did you know Kansas City passed a ban to box ordinance in 2018? Have you been asked about your felony conviction on an application for employment or rental housing? If so, we want to know by who. Please contact the Reentry Subcommittee of KC360 at 816-231-0217 and let's help end this discrimination. This message is a public service of KKFI.
Here's the calendar for the week of April 15th. Legal Aid of Western Missouri provides free civil legal services to low-income and vulnerable people in Jackson County, Missouri. If you're interested, you can call 816-474-6750 to apply. Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America is a very active group of mothers and others. You can learn where their virtual meetings this week will occur at momsdemandaction.org. Please check the calendar at moresquare.org for events you can attend. You can be involved. Thursday, April 18th, 6 p.m., Corey's Network Grief to Relief Seminar invites you to the Maddie Road Center at 148 North Topping Avenue, Kansas City, Missouri. You can listen to Melissa Johnson, an accomplished attorney who has served as assistant prosecutor in the Jackson County Prosecutor's Office. Currently, she is the Kansas City Director of Public Safety. In September 2023, she announced her candidacy for Jackson County Prosecutor. For those unable to attend in person, all sessions are accessible via Zoom. To get the Zoom link, please visit corysnetwork.org. Thursday, April 18th, 5 to 7 p.m., Hope and Healing Support Group, sponsored by Casey Mothers in Charge for Survivors of Homicide, meets at 3200 Wayne Avenue, Kansas City, Missouri. Please register by calling 816-912-2601. There's more information on Facebook. My name is Terry, reminding you that these events and more can be found on the Jaws of Justice radio page on the KKFI website, kkfi.org, as well as on the Jaws of Justice Facebook page. Stay safe. Thanks to all our listeners. Stay close to your dial and stay well. We will now return to our show about health care of persons incarcerated in Missouri. This is Terry Wilkie. It was not too many weeks ago, Macy and I were kicking the can around about upcoming shows on Jaws of Justice, and we hit the topic of healthcare. And so I simply Googled that, healthcare for prisoners, and Missouri prison reform came right up to the top of the Google search. I want to say good morning to you, Lori Curry. How are you this morning?
Good morning. I'm great. Thank you for having me.
Well, I'm so pleased to have you on. And Erin, we have not met. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
And we also have Macy Jones. He's one of our hosts on Jaws of Justice. So, Lori, Missouri prison reform is located in the southeast corner of Missouri in Joplin. Is that where you all are?
Yes, the southwest corner of the state, Joplin.
Right. Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm sorry I said east. I'm from Kansas. I'm showing my colors, I guess. Mm-hmm. And now then, 2019, you started this. And do you want to say a few words about how it was you saw the need for, I would say, prison advocacy? What do you call it?
Yes, that's what we do. We advocate for people who are directly impacted by the carceral system. So people who live inside prisons, but also their loved ones, children, family members. So I do live in Southwest Missouri. I had never had experience with a carceral system before. And I began engaging in a pen pal relationship with somebody who was living in a prison and had been for a little over 20 years. And I began to learn some of the truths about our prisons and who lives there, the healthcare system, the food, the cleanliness. And I realized that I felt like I had been lied to about our prison system. And I felt like if that were true for me, that was probably true for a lot of other people. So I began just putting out on social media some of the truths. I began posting letters from people inside prison, their loved ones, and I quickly began being contacted by more loved ones. And then I was contacted by prison staff wanting to tell more horrors that were going on, and they felt like they couldn't speak out without retaliation. And I saw the need for that, for advocacy for people in prison and their loved ones. And so we eventually turned it into a nonprofit.
And I think she was calling out to you, Erin, when she said prison staff. When you got started with Missouri Prison Reform, were you employed in Department of Corrections?
Yeah, I was.
As a nurse?
Yes.
And now then, Macy, you have been in prison in Missouri, correct?
That's correct.
And how many years were you in prison in Missouri?
Oh, over 30, 25 plus years. Let's go, let's say that.
25 plus years.
So when you were in, how did you receive health care?
I received health care by putting in a form requesting medical treatment, and then appointment schedule would come out, and then they would escort you up to the medical.
And do they have things? You guys, yesterday I had a cold, and so I just reached in my bathroom cabinet and took an aspirin. Are there aspirins available for people in prison, or is there Tylenol? Like,
Go ahead, nurse.
we can be conversational, Aaron. It's not a problem.
Okay. some of those they have to buy off canteen. Some of them they can get, like, but a lot of those they have to go through the HR process, and they're given as OTCs or over the counters. So a lot of them don't have just an abundance of ibuprofen, Tylenol laying around in their cells, unless they've been able to get some off canteen. But those that are incarcerated that don't have a lot of money, you can't afford to go buy those, or, you know, oh, hey, I'm sick now and I don't have any canteen. Does it get delivered till next week, whatever have you? They have to go to the HR, AHSR process in order to obtain those.
And along with that, you know, as she was stating, you really would have to buy your own, and then it's going to take some time for them to get it from medical for you to even receive it. So by the time you receive the ibuprofen or whatever, aspirin, you know, hey, you pretty much done did whatever you had to do to take care of yourself. You know, you may have to go to someone else and have them, hey, man, you got some aspirins, or which is illegal to do in incarceration, but that sometimes is the only way that you can get it, and hope that you got a friend there that's willing to share his ibuprofen or aspirins.
Right. Well, I'm going to shout out to all of you and say that this business of keeping people in a cell for years is not conducive to good health. Wouldn't we all agree with that? The confinement.
Yeah, not at all.
Mentally and physically. And so it's curious why we would set up a situation like that. Anybody have any ideas on?
I can tell you one of my ideas.
Yes, please do, Lori.
The prison industrial system is a big moneymaker. It's a big moneymaker for the healthcare contractor. It's a big moneymaker for the state. They get federal funding for different programs they do. So if we're over incarcerating people and giving them extremely long sentences, that's just more money for people. I would also like to state, when I started doing this, medical was already awful and has been for years. But what we're hearing from residents now and even medical staff is that it's getting worse. So, and Aaron can talk a bit about this, Centurion took over medical care a couple of years ago. But what we've found out is that about a year and a half ago, a big corporation called the Sullivan Brothers bought out Centurion. And that's when things got even worse. Right now, we're hearing from medical staff, and this is when Aaron first reached out to me, that they don't have enough staff to even pass out meds. So people in prisons are not being given their meds regularly, including insulin, seizure meds, heart medication, mental health meds. And we hear, so our organization communicates with about 750 people in prisons right now. We send out a newsletter to people in prisons, but what we're hearing from them is that they regularly are not given their medication. And what we're hearing from the medical staff is they're telling their superiors, hey, we don't have enough staff to pass out medications. And they're telling them that, and the superiors are saying, then don't pass out medication. So, you know, people are not being given their meds regularly. I have epilepsy. I know it's important that I get that medication regularly. Diabetics are not getting their insulin on time or, you know, a whole day. And that's extremely dangerous. So that's, you know, a new development in the medical neglect issue inside our prisons that I think a lot of people don't realize happened.
Well, is the phenomena of illness in prison going up? Macy, when's the last time you were in prison? How many years?
Oh, it's been over 12 years, 8 years.
And was there a high number of people who were ill at that time?
Oh, most definitely, you know, including myself. You know, at some point I was diagnosed with a high cholesterol and a high blood pressure, you know, which I never even knew I had, but then I was diagnosed with it and put on medication. However, individuals were having, this was a question that I was going to ask Aaron, because now I'm hearing from individuals that are incarcerated that they're having to pay to go to medical now. Is that correct?
Some camps do make you pay for your HSRs, yeah. And then I think the thought behind that was to slow the roll on some of the people who turn in 50 for 1 week for crazy things. And then it kind of filters out those who really need it. But then they're in the issue, those that don't have money or can't afford to buy it, you're ultimately neglecting them of any kind of medical care because they can't afford those, you know? I don't know that that was necessarily a fair way to do that either.
Well, I don't quite understand what you said. You used some acronyms.
It's called a health service request, or they're called MSRs, medical service requests. And, you know, the person would maybe say, like, I'm having a lot of sore throats, or I'm having some chest pains, or I've got a wound on my foot, or, you know, I hurt my elbow, you know, and then they write those in. Then they're triaged and seen by a nurse and then onto a provider if needed.
It's essentially just a request to be seen by some kind of provider.
Right. And we was talking about incarcerating for long periods of time. You know, there's a show that I would also like to be able to do called Exploitation of the Incarcerated. You know, how big business, as you were talking about, is making money off of the long-term sentences that individuals is doing. Now, I know that there's a lot of people in society that say, well, hey, you committed a crime, you've been sentenced, and that's it. But, you know, slavery's been abolished, supposedly. So now the new age slavery is the incarceration. And how do you feel about that, Laura?
I completely agree with you. I just finished a fellowship with the National Council of Incarcerated and Formerly Incarcerated Women and Girls. And we spent a lot of time talking about that, how slavery essentially never ended. And I want to touch on that a little bit because I think people don't understand, a lot of white people don't understand, a lot of people who have never been poor don't understand a lot of times what leads to crime. And that's essentially living in poverty. People feel like they don't have another avenue to provide for their families. And I think that we could really change a lot of things if we supported people who are struggling financially, better education, all kinds of things like that, and reduce our prison population and reduce crime at the same time. So I absolutely agree with you.
I have another question. Prison reform, does that advocate also for individuals that are medically ill with diabetes and have loved ones out here that would rather have them take care of them at home as opposed to them being incarcerated? Is there any program or anything towards that, having them with medical problems released, you know?
Yeah. So I'm the only employee of our organization right now.
Okay.
We're really small grassroots. But we work with FAM, which is Families Against Mandatory Minimums, and they are pushing for a geriatric release bill, I believe by Senator Brian Williams in the St. Louis area, that would essentially give more leeway for people to, more leeway for the parole board to let people out who are aging or have medical conditions. So yes, that is definitely something we support. I also want to say, our organization does records requests monthly for the deaths in the prisons. We track that. The biggest cause of death in prisons is natural deaths, which I believe could really be lowered if they had adequate medical care.
In the first month
of this year, we had 13 people in our prisons die. Last year, it was 11 people a month and on average.
Don't even talk about COVID. The COVID in prisons was terrible when it began.
That's when I started doing the records requests, because we were hearing from people inside, like, this person died of COVID, but the Department of Corrections wasn't really being honest about that. So I started doing those weekly. I've moved to monthly now. Now that COVID is better inside prisons, it's still being reported to us. The second cause of death in prisons right now is overdoses, which is a huge problem, the drugs in prisons. And I'll just touch on that real quick. They have taken away our physical mail. So, you know, if Erin was incarcerated, I cannot send her a card, a letter. It goes to Florida, gets scanned in on a tablet. They don't have physical mail anymore. And then last year, they took away our ability to send books in to people in prison. Which we could only do through an approved vendor like Amazon anyway, and they're saying that was because of drugs, which doesn't make a lot of sense. But the drug problem has not gotten any better, and our belief is that most drugs come in through people who work in prisons.
I agree with you, because
I think that the natural death, to touch on that, is for sure we're not feeding them well at all. I see in my own eyes a bag of like wheat products that's not for human consumption, and that is part of what they feed in a regularly scheduled breakfast meal. They don't have adequate vitamins, they don't have adequate nutrition. The things you buy in canteen are so heavily sodium, processed fake. They're not getting any kind of real fresh foods. I think, you know, and the company now is there just to make money, and so it's they don't have a heart, they don't have a care to treat them like humans, and they want to just cut edges and cut dollars where they can. And I definitely think it needs to be improved, like at a base level, down to what we're feeding them, their nutrition, follow up, continuity of care, because they're not getting, like I said, their adequate meds on time, if they even get them. But then they're not having regular follow ups. And there are a lot of great providers that do have a heart for the men there and women there, that do try their hardest. I believe that. But their hands are kind of tied with the volume amounts, as well as like resources and getting denied on things that, you know, they want to do. There's got to be a give somewhere, because I think it would improve those monthly rates significantly. So to have somebody's cancer tracked and treated properly before it's too late and things like that.
And isn't there some type of restriction put in place on the nurses within these institutions concerning what they can and what they can't do?
Yeah. I mean, like I can in my own scope of practice have I can and cannots, but then as well as like, I mean, I can't reach out and go above my providers. I can't reach out and go above people. So, you know, I can do my best to get meds, but I'm only one person in a camp of 2,000 people, or they maybe give us two nurses for a camp of 2,000 people. And the ratio is just insanely unrealistic.
Well, I wanted to say that the prison industrial complex, the profits in that are in a large part, as you say, from the service providers, for example, the cafeteria, for example, the medical care. The profits that these companies make are just tremendous. And Macy, you have told me before that there are people working in prison to manufacture the uniforms that the prisoners wear.
Everything.
So
everything.
They're not getting paid the minimum wage to do this.
Nah.
And then the prison system gets to charge the government, the company that's providing these uniforms, whatever they can get on their bid for the uniform.
They also make all the officers' clothing, and they make, like, when they give out staff appreciation gifts, they fashioned all of those jackets as well. And then during COVID, they fashioned all the inmate masks, all the inmate and all the guard masks. They did all of that.
Yeah, it's MVE, Missouri Vocational Enterprises. It's essentially slave labor. These men are employed, but they make, you know, pennies an hour.
They don't make the minimum wage.
No, not at all. There's a website where state employees can go buy things that were made by people in prison. For, you know, pennies an hour. And then the state is making tons of money off this. MVE is like a billion-dollar industry, and making all of that off of slave labor. And then as far as the contractors inside prisons go, we have Securus, which makes a ton of money off of families, essentially, who are paying for phone calls, video visits, emails, canteen, the medical provider, and then now we have Aramark, who provides the food. That's a new one, too. I'm sorry, Macy, I think that you got interrupted. I'll stop.
No, it's okay. You're putting out a lot of good information for a lot of people to listen to and hear. But I have one question. What is it that you would want to say to someone that may be a victim of someone who is incarcerated?
A victim of someone who is incarcerated?
Yeah.
I would say...
Because you know there are some people out there that say, hey, we don't want to hear about that, we don't want to talk about that, they did such and such to me or whatever. What could you say to them to get them to be sympathetic to the plight of the medical conditions of someone incarcerated?
I explain it to people a lot that when people are released from prison, we want them to be more healed when they went in. We want them in a better position to be successful in society. We want crime reduced. If people are being treated as less than human inside prison, what kind of person are they going to be like when they come out of prison? My heart goes out to victims of crimes. I don't excuse crimes at all for what I'm doing. But I think there needs to be healing in prison, both physically, emotionally, mentally. And I think that that can all happen. I think that we can advocate for a reduction of crime and better conditions in our prisons.
Yeah, it's curious. A person is capable of committing a bad act. Well, our early half hour was on wrongful conviction, so... Not everybody, but the majority of prisoners have been convicted of actually doing a bad act. And then they're put into prison and bad acts are done to them. I don't know how this is going to rehabilitate one single person on the planet. It doesn't make any logical sense. You would think that there would be modeled behavior and how to behave like a good human being. But, oh, no, not in our prisons, yeah.
But the whole process of rehabilitation is you can't rehabilitate somebody. They have to be willing to open themselves up to rehabilitating exactly. themselves. So if you don't want to, if you are being subjected to atrocities or some harmful actions towards you, then your mentality changes. You either go, you get harder and harder. Till one day there are those that have make up their mind to change. But we're supposed to be people that believe in second chances, you know. And everybody probably done committed some type of crime themselves. They just ain't been caught walking through a grocery store eating up the grapes or something, you know.
And I've got to shout out and say that when we closed our mental hospitals, many people with mental health issues were put into prison. And so that makes a tremendous piece of work for prisoners who don't have mental health issues, for the people who work in prisons. I'm not sure that people are all trained on how to deal with extreme mental illness.
No, and the extreme mental illness then becomes a medical issue as well when there's injuries or medication adverse reactions because they're not followed up on or they're having psychosis because, you know, they haven't got these meds that have to be, you know, regulated to keep certain levels in your mind and in your body, and they haven't gotten them in 2 weeks or the order expired and nobody followed up on it. Or, you know, you have them hurting themselves or other people because mental health helping either.
Lori, or do y'all have any upcoming events or anything coming up?
Yes. So this Wednesday evening at 7 p.m., we are partnering with Donkey Saddle Projects. It's a virtual event, and it is called The Intersection of Islamophobia and Anti-Blackness Within U.S. Prisons. When I first started doing this, we were quickly contacted by some men at Bonterre Prison who were Muslim and were praying and were pepper sprayed by staff. And so we have a virtual event on Wednesday night to talk about that incident and how it happens frequently in our prisons. The following Wednesday night is our family event. We have family meetings monthly just to kind of connect with family members who are impacted by incarceration. That's always the last Wednesday of the month at 7 p.m.
And Lori, would you give us your website for Missouri Prison Reform again, please?
Yes, it is moprisonreform.org, and we're on all socials. We have a newsletter for the public they can sign up for on our website also.
Well, I want to thank you for being our guest. I've been speaking with Lori Curry. She's the founder of Missouri Prison Reform. And Aaron Brown, who was formerly employed as a nurse in Department of Corrections. Thank you both for being on Jaws of Justice.
And that really looked, Aaron, and that really looks nutritious.
Don't worry, it's radio. No one can see you.
An apple a day will keep the doctors away.
There you go.
It was nice meeting the both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
It's the 420 Drug War News. Today we close out our discussion with Mr. Doug McVeigh of the Drug Truth Network, as well as with Mr. Anthony Taylor, another Oregon reformer. It's been about 6 weeks ago, I watched one of these First Amendment auditor videos where a guy got put in a police car. They're out there, the cops are roaming around. One cop walks by the police car and an acorn falls and hits the top of the police car. He thinks he's just been shot at. He takes out his weapon. He empties a magazine into that car with a gentleman inside of it. And then he puts in another clip and he empties it again. He yells to another officer down the street who empties another clip from the other direction into that car holding the prisoner that just got hit by an acorn.
Who was handcuffed with no weapon.
Handcuffed with no weapon, sitting in the back of a police car that they put 37 rounds into while he was sitting there because of an acorn. That's law enforcement in America, my friends. That's what we are facing, paranoid, delusional mothers.
I hate to say it. I love comic books. I read comic books when I was a kid. And some of those shows like NCIS and some of these other, I mean, they're comic books. Hawaii 5-0 and the rest. There's no relation to reality. You know, and I think that's part of the problem. We don't think of it that way. I mean, right. the good guys are shooting off clips. I mean, they're blowing up, you know, hundreds of rounds all over during their firefights and during their shootouts. And it's only the bad guys who ever get hit. All the rounds that go past, they must have just magically dropped to the ground after they passed the bad guys. And it's like, what about the collateral damage? What about the houses? What about the cars? What about the people who may not have gotten out of the way when you started shooting 50 yards away? And, you know, those stray rounds are going someplace, and we're not, but we've decided that it's all a comic book.
Yep. Well, Dean, I really appreciate the time you've given us here today to hear our comments on some of these really important issues. And I just can't tell you how much I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, Anthony, I appreciate that as well. I appreciate your intellect, your knowledge, your experience. And we'll certainly be bringing you back before this year's over. Thank you for joining us. Doug, I thank you. Real quick, tell the folks on your show this week, what's on your show?
This week on Century Lies is part four of our coverage of the Commission on Narcotic Drugs. We have people like Steve Rolls and Andre Selensky talking about synthetic drugs and new threats out there and how it's inevitable. The Iron Law prohibition. We have some other folks talking about harm reduction in crisis. People from Ukraine. It's going to be a great show.
That's going to do it for this week. I thank you for listening, and I am Dean at drugtruth.net.
What am I gonna do now? We hope you enjoyed today's show and that we leave you with something to think about, something to talk to your neighbors about, and a reason to get involved. As always, the opinions expressed are those of the host and the guest of Jaws of Justice Radio, not necessarily of KKFI, the Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated, its staff, or volunteers. You can find our calendar of events and a link